can't sort of classify them into those which are financial problems and have been requested. Members of the finance committee, they are available. Then the second group of ones are the operational ones, the inspections and criteria and others, and the acting CEO can attend to that. And I'll lastly attempt to look at the matters that are policy strategy, including the interpretation of our mandate. I'll take that and maybe then ask Dr. Pillay as well to comment on that. But maybe let's start with the direct financial questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will start with the one on irregular expenditure. It is true that the expenditure relates to the office lease, MSP office lease, where we are. And the expenditure that occurred in 2015-16, a letter was written to the National Treasury signed by the Chairperson in September last year, 2016. That is 12, more than a year ago. The National Treasury came back to us with additional information like board minutes, report of the AG. We have provided all that information to them, and we are still waiting for their response on the matter. But I can just indicate that letter requesting for condemnation was sent to the National Treasury in September 2016. We've been liaising with them to say that this is taking a little bit long and we need finality on the matter. So, but that was more than a year ago. And in terms of the compliance budget and the function of the compliance inspectorate is, I think, generally the core function of the office, inspecting facilities, etc., etc. And currently, it is the biggest unit in terms of staff numbers. As indicated on the slide, more than half the staff members of the office are in the inspectorate. That's why the budget also is reflective of the activities and the size and also the staff numbers. And long term, the complaints management unit is also expected to grow almost towards the same size as the inspectorate. The difference is that most of the inspectors came from the Department of Health, so they were absorbed directly to the OHSC. So, but as time goes on and then also the resources allow, the complaints management unit is also going to be probably as big as the compliance inspectorate. But currently, because the compliance inspectorate is the biggest, that's why the budget is also reflective of that situation. And there was also the question around the resignation. There were three people who resigned. One was because she came from Durban, and the family was in Durban, and she felt that she needed to go back home, and that was one of the reason why she ended up leaving. And the other two, it was because of the remuneration that was offered by the entities that wanted to employ them. The OHSC is using the remuneration structure of the DPSA, which means it's the same as in government. So those two were offered better remuneration by other employers. So those are the reasons why they left. In fact, when they leave, we do conduct exit interviews, and the indications were that if the remuneration was more or less along the same lines, they wouldn't leave. So, but that was the reason why they ended up leaving. And there was the other question on fruitless expenditure, the late payment to SARS. This happened in November, it was 1 month in November 2016. The situation was such that we had one payroll administrator here who was responsible for this. Because of segregation of duties in the office, no one person does, can do, especially on transactions, can do two transactions. It has to be started by somebody, then there's the middle person who verifies, and there's the third link. We had one payroll administrator who was expectant, and it so happened that during the week when these payments were supposed to be made, she thought she'll come to the office, but when waking up every morning, the doctor had booked her off, and she kept on saying, no, I'll come tomorrow to come and finalize. And because the process couldn't be started because of segregation of duties, and on that day, because the due date is the 7th of every month, on the 7th of the following month, which was November, when we're supposed to pay, we ended up saying we'll then issue out a check to pay SARS. Unfortunately, banks have got this rule that a check must not exceed 500,000. So, and the payment that we had to make to SARS was more than 500,000. So we could only pay a portion on the 7th and the other portion the following day. So that was the limitation. But we have since addressed that and trained two more staff members. In fact, we got one of the interns to come and double up on the payroll side, and we also trained another staff member to make sure that if one of them is not there, the other one can fill the role. And the National Treasury was also requested to conduct an investigation into this matter, and also report accordingly, and then steps will then be taken in terms of how the recovery process is going to unfold. And the other one, in terms of the HR capacity in the complaints management unit, the report shows that we had 104 out of 108. That was the situation when we closed the financial year. But a lot of the investigators in the complaints management unit were only came on board in February of 2017. Which meant that for the better part of the year, the recruitment process was still ongoing and headhunting, etc., etc. But that was the situation, 104 was the situation at the end of the year, but during the year, there were all these challenges in terms of getting the necessary capacity to come and assist in the complaints management unit. But that has since been addressed. And the other one, the last one, was on the equity targets. It is true that so far we have not yet had persons with disabilities on board. When we advertise even our positions, we also indicate that people with disabilities are encouraged to apply for this position, and we have not been able to succeed. I think, which means that this requires us to go on a hard hunting like we have done with the other positions. We agree that this is one area where we need to show improvement. I think it will be a change in recruitment strategy in how we recruit them. Probably head hunting will be the best, identifying the most suitable persons to come and fill the position. I think those were the finance questions in HR. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We can probably have a read if things are not quite clear, but if we allow us, let's just go through them. Thank you very much. Can I then request Mr. Msibi just to answer some of the operational questions that were put in, for example, criteria for routine inspections, about the hospitals, resolution of complaints, quite a few of those things.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In scheduling of inspection, we've got the criteria that we are using correctly. There are a lot of issues that we take into consideration. Number one, we can randomly select the facilities that the inspectors would go and inspect. Number two, some of the inspection that we conduct as routine, because there's a groundwork that we do even before conducting the inspection. We would go and look into the indicators, what is happening in the facility, how are the indicators that they are reporting on to the DHIS. We also use some of the media reports. If we pick some of the media reports, they assist us to schedule the inspections upfront, because the EWS that we are developing within the office is not yet fully functional, but we also use it. We use the media, we use whistleblowers, we use complaints that we are receiving, and we randomly sample facilities to say, let's go and sample and visit this facility. So that is the process that we are following to go and conduct inspections. There was also the issue of the professional editing. Because we participate in most of the contracts that the National Treasury is introducing, the RT contracts. We've made a request, wanted to find out if there is an RT contract that they have in place that focuses on issues of professional editing, legal drafting, and all of those. So the letter went to the Treasury. We've not received a response, but they usually, in all the contracts that we have, voiciously, except the internal auditors, most of the contract were participating in the RT contract. At first, there are only two contracts, in fact, that are not part of the RT contract, which were done at the earlier stage when it was not mandatory to participate in the RT contract, which is the traveling and the internal auditors. But most of our contracts are RT contracts. So we've made a request to the Treasury to participate in the RT contract if they do have the one that focuses on professional editing, legal drafting, and all of those issues. There was also the issue about the complaints that are not resolved. Some of the complaints that are not resolved, I think I've already highlighted that there are delays from HODs to respond to the letters, because we write three letters. Some of them are from the private sector, and I gave the figures and the numbers. And there was also a question on which province, because we said we went to 8 provinces out of 9 about the EWS. The province that, because we wrote to all of them, they all agreed to went to those provinces. We discussed the EWS, but Western Cape never agreed to us coming and discussing the issue of the EWS. In fact, when they were responding, they said, give us the work, we want to see the work first. But we said, allow us and give us an opportunity to come and demonstrate the work to you, because it's still the work in progress. There will be an opportunity for you to input, but it never took place. They never allowed us, the HOT never agreed to it. The other issue is the issue that relates to the recommendations of the Ombud. The indicator says it's the percentage of monitored for implementation. We were in direct contact with Gauteng Health and the National Department of Health, and they were submitting to us letters. It's not really honourable member, but what is it that they have implemented, starting from what is it that they are planning, how they are going to recommend, they report all of those issues to say this recommendation. Other activities were unfolding. There were doctors were sent to these NGOs to assess patients. So that is what we're monitoring. What is it that we are doing towards making sure that the recommendation is fully achieved? So it starts with the really monitoring to say there was this recommendation, what is it that is happening, and what is it that we are intending to do. So they frequently submit reports per recommendation to say what is it that they are doing. So those reports is what we submitted to to also the auditors. True, some of them, they have not implemented them fully, but there are plans as to how they are going to implement them, which they've submitted to the office to say, this is how we are going to approach this, and this is what we are going to do. It's not only about the implementation. It starts with the monitoring towards the implementation of the recommendation itself. And also just to add on the issue of resignation, there were staff that resigned, and some of the staff members have decided to go back to the National Department of Health after the staff was transferred on Section 197. There were a few staff members that opted to remain in the department, but when we had to report, they resigned from OHSC, because they were transferred to OHSC, but they went back to the Department of Health, and they were accommodated there. Especially the complaints unit that was housed in the National Department of Health, the staff refused to come to the OHSC. And they were part, in terms of the transfer of function, they were supposed to come. The staff is still in the National Department of Health, and they were retained. So we calculated them as part of the staff member that never came through to the office. The issue of Mufumahadi Manabo Mopedi Regional Hospital in Kwakwa. Yes, we did send the staff to the hospital. We've sent the inspectors to go and inspect, and we've also sent the investigators to go and investigate. The investigators are still investigating the issues raised about Mufumahadi Manabo Mopedi, and they would compile the report, and it will be, when they are done, forwarded to the health ombudsman to take it further. But during the process, we have to go and investigate, and they have to get documents, so it's a process on its own, but it's still ongoing. Yes, the inspectors went there, and after the inspectors went there, they picked some critical issues. It was escalated to the investigation unit to further take it forward and investigate them thoroughly so that it can hand them over to the health ombudsman. The unresolved complaints, despite the fact that we didn't meet the time frame where they were supposed to respond in 60 days, because some of them have delayed, and the time frame kicked us out, we continuously engage with the provinces and try to help them to resolve the issues. But when we report here, because we've set the time frame of, say, 60 days, some of them are out of the 60 days, and cuts off, but after 60 days we don't say we close the complaint, we deal with those complaints. Also, from the private sector, we started to engage with Netcare. We are engaging with them on one-on-one in terms of those complaints, but most of them, because of the delays, they are out of the 60 days time frame.
Deputy Chair, I think you wanted to comment.
700 complaints and only 300 and something resolved. Is that it, Pafan?
Quickly, Ed, before I come to the specifics that I was going to answer one is just to mention about this sampling the sampling of hospitals. When all things are equal, which they never really are, there was an indication that we should start with the academic institutions because they were training as well, so the breakdown in quality and standards had a much more serious effect in terms of prolonging that to the training. So all the academic hospitals were inspected, tertiary, provincial, regional, and then we sort of jumped a little bit and went to the get a sort of a spread sampling to the primary health care areas and clinics, again because we realized that in preparation for the NHI we must ensure that there's a good grounding on primary health care and the clinics as well. So it's been based on a several criteria, and sometimes they clash. For example, not clash in terms of that they're wrong, but they overtake each other. For example, when we life asset management report was put here, we were informed that we better take some action. In fact, the board went back and said, let's try and begin to develop criteria for regulations and norms for health institutions. But as you alluded, there were other issues which related to legislation, the power of provinces, which were actually beyond the mandate of the OHSC. And we did discuss this with the minister. We're going to take it up again and say, should we be going ahead? Finally, about again life as a demeaning, I accept now the criticism that it gives the impression that things have been settled. I think maybe it's more accurate to say the implementation has been initiated in all those recommendations. But once it's initiated, it goes beyond the powers of the OHSC, except for monitoring. For example, right now we know that the former Deputy Judge President Musenege has been appointed to deal with the tribunal. The tribunal is appointed by the minister and he's come out with recommendations on alternative dispute resolutions. And again, those things, obviously, they're ongoing. So maybe we should qualify better to say when we 100%, what are we actually talking about? So we accept that point. I don't know if the other board members want to comment on what has been said before we move on to the policy issues. Thank you. The first one, which is a very critical issue, is this delay in the promulgation of the rules and regulations on norms and standards. And I think this goes back a year now when we first prepared and submitted this to the department. The initial reaction was these were not properly done, they need to be reviewed and revised. Some of them, the terms that were used, this was an engagement with the national NHC CAC, that some of them could be put into what is called soft law and hard law, and that we should try and get this process. We disagreed over a period of time to the extent that at the beginning of the year, there was a suggestion that there must be some intervention, and we invited WHO to sort of facilitate a workshop between OHSC and the Department of Health. Out of that, there was an agreement that we would work jointly on these regulations, and that's why we handed them over, and then the department asked for comments. But we did not get invited to participate in that. And then they've reviewed and they've sent back a shorter version of the rules and regulations. Again, the agreement and understanding was that what was called the soft law software should be changed into guidelines. And now it looks like we've got to do guidelines and then do regulations as different processes. And this is where we are at the moment. We're not comfortable about this. We've been seeking a meeting as a board with the minister to discuss this, and in fact we will be getting a meeting with the minister next week. But then maybe Dr. Pile would like to add on further information. As far as the ombuds is concerned, your submission and of the interpretation of this function is quite correct. On many occasions in the working relations, the Ombuds has been quite clear that he does not report to the OHSC, but directly to the minister. And we accept that position. But from the operational point of view, because we support him with staff, finances, for example, the issue of this investigation, it was initiated by the minister directly with the Ombuds, and were told to carry the baby. And so we've been paying lawyers. We just paid how much? 1.4 million. which was that money that was budgeted. Unfortunately, we had money which had been rolled over. So there are some of those dynamics which might put us into an unpleasant situation in front of the committee here. And therefore, we are now working on a memorandum of understanding between the Ombuds and the OHSC on how we're going to deal with these operational issues. And that is a draft going on, and we're going to bring it up to the minister again so that this working relationship does not cause tensions and problems. So that's how far it's gone with the office of the Ombud. The next point of policy and interpretation, this compliant, non-compliant provinces, what do we do? Well, theoretically, we're supposed to escalate and report them to the minister. But the threshold is not quite clear to say, okay, you've had first warning, second warning, third warning. Maybe it would be something that will have to come up in the regulations that if you don't respond within 60 days, whatever it is, the matter will be reported to the minister. So it informs us a little bit more that when we do the regulations, we must take care of this, because we did not anticipate that any of these provinces would not be cooperating. So we have to put something in as well in terms of escalating. But the principle is that we would escalate this to the minister. The budget things, the accommodation budget issues, we've been able to roll over money and we're using it, but it's been difficult to, when you talk about budget review, we have to seriously, as a board, look at this in the sense that once we move to the new premises, once we employ, because it's money that was meant to employ people, that money is going to be consumed very quickly and we're going to run into problems. So I appreciate the point you make about that. We should really be looking at budget review and recommendations, and in fact we have to restructure the office, and at the end of the day we're going to come short. We won't be able to meet with the budget that we have. We put in a budget, it's adjusted, and we just given money. I don't think that unless I'm mistaken, we sit with the department and or treasury to have that kind of sort of review as yet. But again, Dr. Pillay might inform us a little bit more as to what goes on before we reach the final figure. I think I'll stop there, Chair. Thank you very much. Oh, yes. Sorry, Deputy. Sorry about that.
Yeah, just to add to what Chair, to add to what the chairperson next to me was saying about your inquiry about the Ombud reporting directly to the minister, that there's this confusion or the conflict in that he reports directly to the minister, yet he's dependent on almost everything from the office, creates a problem where, like, when we were supposed to draft a memorandum of memorandum of agreement. Am I right? We agreed that it be an agreement, not that we, you know, because it shouldn't be vague that whatever we are going to be, we will both agree to this is the way we'll be working together. Then he will take it to the minister, whereas we thought that we could, you know, sit and discuss so that this relationship is conducive to both parties. But as the chairperson has said, meeting with the minister on Monday on the 9th and then also the board meeting on the 17th, this is part of what we are going to deliberate with at length. Just to
Okay, we'll give you to DDG, Dr. Clay. I wish you all the best in that. I was reading that act. I kept on repeating the two sections where it deals about the ombudsman and yourself.
I just ask myself, how is this thing working practically?
I was struggling to understand how is it practical working, because the resources are not with the ombuds. They are with the office, but it's not accountable to you. You are neither accountable to him as well. So it's account somewhere, but you must get the resources from yourself. I was just saying, how does this thing work? When it comes to you, if he wants to procure things, how is he procuring? Who must procure? Do you procure on his behalf and give the service? If he's not happy about the service, what must happen? And all those things. But did he respond on some of the issues?
Thank you, Chair. I think there were three issues. So, yes, I think it is a complicated relationship between the ombud and the office. Our interpretation was that the ombud would report through the report of the office, but maybe if the preference of the committee that the report is separate. The issue is, as you pointed out, is that the ombud doesn't have resources, so the ombud is using everything from the office. And so in presenting that, I suppose, it's only the performance aspects that maybe can be separate. But maybe we need to think about how we do that and get another interpretation of how that should actually be presented.
Chair, the issue...
But I read the Act. The Act says, no, he must prepare a report and submit the report to the minister, who must then submit the report to Parliament. And then it says the office as well, the CO must prepare a report. So there are two reports there in that Act. There's a report from the office, which the CO does, approved by the board, then get given to the minister for tabling. And then there's another one that the ombudsman, that one is not financial, but the ombudsman, the office one is performance and financial report. But the ombudsman, it says just report, doesn't include the financial aspect. It talks about the role and the functions, the work that the ombuds is doing. Must then annually, that's why even his period is even shorter than the period for the office, because the period for the office is in terms of how your department also prepared. But he's, it's just within a month, after the end of the financial year, he must prepare a report, submit to the minister, who must then table to Parliament. So it can't be the same.
We have tabled it in the memorandum of agreement because we were sitting with the two advocates and the HR committee to draft this, looking at what the Act says, and therefore we have put it down that he has to table a report for Parliament. We were not specific with regard to, in our memorandum of agreement, we were not specific as you were, sir, about a month on April or May. We were not specific, but it is, now we understand that it has to be, in the memorandum of agreement, we need to put the month in. But it was just to make sure that we work smoothly so that we can come and report to you.
Yes, Honourable Member. I think you are right, 100% right. In terms of, it's legislated that the ombuds must table his own report after it has been given to the minister. And unfortunately, the ombuds works directly with the department. I think the department will have to write to him to say, can you kindly prepare the report and submit to the minister as a way forward.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think maybe on our side, our interpretation was that Program 4 tried to incorporate it, but we can ask the Ombuds for an independent report of this, of what he's been doing.
That one is a financial report on the audit of the office of the commission. But the Act is very clear to which we open the one of the commission. It's very clear. It says
the ombuds must prepare a report on the affairs and the function. On the affairs and the function of the ombuds within a month. This one is not within a month, so it can't be the same. For this one, it's until September. This one is within a month. You must prepare a report and submit a report to the minister for tabling to parliament. So it's a different process altogether.
Chair, we will request Ombu to do that. On the issue relating to buildings, we haven't been requested by the office to assist with that. However, the National Treasury, we have provided advice to the office about how buildings have to be acquired. Treasury has certain procedures that have to be followed, so we certainly support the office if need be in terms of trying to solve that problem. In terms of trying to get agreements with the professional councils, we have a structure referred to as a forum of statutory health councils, where all the professional councils serve. The office was invited to participate in that meeting, where they would then share the need to have a memorandum of agreement with those councils. There was agreement there that the councils will sign agreements with them. So it's not clear to me. When I raise it with the councils, they say, well, the office is not responding, and so I don't know on whose side the blame actually lies. Chair, on the issue relating to norms and standards, yes, I think there is a difference of approach about how norms and standards should be structured in regulations. So there's certainly a feeling that some of the norms and standards should not be structured in regulations but in guidelines. So to give you an example, if a norm and standard says that the toilets should be cleaned every half an hour, assuming that in a facility the toilet is cleaned after 45 minutes, the question was, does it mean that it's now an offence because it's a regulation, it's basically breaking the law because you clean the toilet after 45 minutes, not after half an hour. And so the question was, are these not things that should be in soft law, as Prof. Maswari said. So I think those are the issues that need to be resolved between the department and the office about how you deal with those kinds of matters, and rather capture principles of the regulation and detail in soft law.
Okay, now there's still a lot of work to be done. Go and resolve some of the issues. We'll like to get some element of progress. But we'd love, Prof, to for you to engage on a budget review. But unfortunately, we don't have time, because after next week we must adopt the report. So if you are able, do that and submit your own budget review process. What is your view on all these budgets that your allocation? So that as we finalize our report next week, we're able to take that into consideration. So it's up to you how you manage that. Because that should be the expectation, because when you come here, you should have engaged on that matter. So if you have not been engaged upon, you've not done your budget review, you've been relying on the department, then you must begin to talk to the department on that process. So that when we're consolidating our report after next week, we're able to consider some of your views in terms of what are you saying about your budget? Does it need to be reviewed, or you're fine with it? If you're fine with it, no. You're not forced to review it if you think you're still okay with it. But if you are not okay with it, you must then engage in a review process and then reflect on those issues that you think needs special attention, so that we're able to include them in our reports at the end of the day. Thanks very much. We've come to the end of this session. This session is adjourned for 10 minutes. We'll then reconvene with CMS in 10 minutes' time. Thanks very much.